Hi. So my name is Armughan and Gaper is back with another podcast. Today we have Nat from Leaf Global who will be telling us about what he's doing in Rwanda, how he came up with the company, and what he has in store. Hi, Nat.
Hey, Armie, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So, can you tell us a bit about where you are right now? Are you flying? Are you currently in Rwanda or the US?
Yeah, I actually just got to the US for the holidays. Trying not to travel as much this year, but
Oh,
got a
yeah.
window to spend some time with family. Yeah.
How was the traveling experience? I heard like a lot of people are wearing masks and everybody is a little too not so touchy.
Yeah, I was actually really impressed. I think the airlines are all doing a very good job keeping the planes clean and circulating the air and not overfilling the flights. And same with the airports. Like everyone's wearing masks, keeping distance. So I do feel like all efforts are being made to reduce the spread from travelers. So that was encouraging.
That's great. I remember traveling a few months ago, like in June. And because I'm a neat freak, I ordered a hazmat suit, a proper hazmat suit with goggles and glasses. Me with my friends, we were four guys wearing complete white suits, and we were going on the plane, and everybody was freaked out. Not because of the virus, but just because they were seeing us. I
Yeah,
remember it.
I'm sure it was quite the sight, but safe. Probably didn't
Yeah, true, save, yeah.
get sick. Yeah.
Absolutely. So yeah,
Nice.
so you are here for holidays and then you're gonna go back?
Yeah, so my company that's in Rwanda, most of my team is there, and we're helping refugees and migrants store and transport cash across borders. So we've created a fintech company to help
Interesting.
refugees and migrants globally, but starting in East Africa.
That is so great. Can you tell us a little more about how this all started? Like, how did you come up with the idea?
Sure. Yeah, and my journey to East Africa was through 2008. I was a management consultant in Washington, D.C., just off of business school, and came across an opportunity to work with the IFC of the World Bank and help them find investments in East Africa and predominantly in Kenya. And it was an 8-month assignment that I thought would be a long time, but that turned into 7 years where I helped start and run a microfinance company in Kenya. So really
7 years in
enjoyed it.
Kenya.
Yeah. It's a long time, but wonderful experience. You know, wonderful people, great opportunities there, great weather, and had this chance to create a company that was providing loans to rural smallholder farmers. So a microfinance model, but for agriculture.
Microfinancing. I remember reading a lot of research reports about how microfinancing is actually allowing people to lift themselves out of poverty. So how has your experience been seeing this happen, like as you create these organizations and programs?
Yeah, and I'm a big believer in the access to finance concept for the low income, rural, the poor as a way of increasing incomes and helping responsibly. I think there's a lot of examples of it not going as well. I think the model that we were using in Kenya, this asset financing model was very effective, and this was loans for assets, irrigation equipment that would help generate income for the farmers, but also could act as a collateral. So we could go into these very remote rural communities and provide loans and do it in a way that was lower risk for the farmers, because if they couldn't pay off their loan, we would just repossess the asset that we financed in the first place and not putting them more in poverty. And then they had a great chance of repaying the loans because the milk or the eggs or the produce from the farm would help pay off the interest, and then the farmers would own those assets after the loan. So it was a really effective model. And it was a profitable business too. We were able to raise capital and help scale it across all of Kenya.
Yeah. This seems like a model which helps the person who is lending the money as well, along with the person who's actually taking the money. Coming from the Middle East or living over there, I've realized a lot of people have this negative idea about getting in debt. So in terms of your experience over there, how did you guys navigate in changing the social identity of taking a loan? How did the populace react?
Yeah, and this is some of the reason too why I've pivoted to more of a savings model that I have with Leaf. But it did take some time in Kenya when we were working with our farmers. We spent a lot of time training the communities on how the loans work, on general financial literacy, but also how to govern as a loan group in a group guarantee. So there's a lot of structures in place that we spent a lot of time training our customer base on how to navigate. And that takes time, it takes an investment. But I think what was really helpful was at the end of the day, the farmers seeing their neighbors acquiring these high yield dairy cows and paying for school fees for their kids, improving their homes, sending their kids to school. So a lot of the other benefits that came out of the finance and the loans. And I think there's less of a stigma, certainly in East Africa, around debt and loans than there are across Middle East and Southeast Asia. So some cultural differences too that made it at times a little bit easier to get a population to understand the upside and the benefits of taking debt financing.
Absolutely, 100%. So with the COVID-19 situation happening in the last year, how has this affected the populations you guys were dealing with? Were there any new programs introduced?
Yeah, and so I made the transition then from the agriculture lending space into this fintech space because I saw the benefits that technology was providing to across East Africa, systems like M-Pesa and mobile money, where you can send and receive funds on your mobile phone and using the telco networks to make payments and to send money, was another way of gaining access to the financial services sector that the population could suddenly do. And that was growing substantially all throughout East Africa. And then the prevalence of other app-based lenders and app-based financial services providers that were all also growing heavily throughout East Africa, but we're still, I think, missing a big market, and that was the lower income, the unbanked, and now the refugee and migrant populations that have had to flee conflict and carry cash with them across borders, which is dangerous and inconvenient. Yeah. And so we developed a digital wallet to serve this market. And so it's a mobile phone-based wallet that works on both smartphones and non-smartphones and helps refugees and migrants store and transport their cash across borders. And they can cash in and cash out of this wallet, similar to an ATM card, but digitally, and do that through all the mobile money networks that we've integrated into. So as a way to protect assets and help people to have a better start in their new lives. But with COVID, as you mentioned, these communities got even more isolated and have been cut off from the formal economies even more. But then also mobile money and digital financial services have really increased in terms of usage during COVID as cash has become less desirable. And in Rwanda alone, there's been a 400% increase in use of mobile money. And that's really helped us drive adoption 400. For our wallet and help people to be trusting of what we're providing. Yeah.
Oh, okay. 400 is a lot. Yeah. So a question of mine would be with this company geared towards refugees, how does, so usually in situations of refugees, you can have situations where they might not have the proper documentation or the proper papers to kind of prove the identity. So how do you guys go around with that? Or how do you navigate around that.
Yep, and that's a big issue globally. And before we launched in East Africa, we looked at Southeast Asia, Middle East, Latin America as well, the Venezuela crisis too, and saw similar challenges at every market. You know, people carrying cash and then not being able to get bank accounts, either because of the identity or documentation challenge, or just the stigma around being a migrant or a refugee with a bank. And so what we've been doing is focusing on the cash and payments networks that generally don't require quite as much documentation to get an account than a bank account might. And so that makes it a little bit easier for a refugee or migrant to open an account with, say, a refugee ID or with a passport or ID from another country, versus a bank account where you most of the time have to prove residency or have to have bank statements or a utilities bill, so that they can at least open this basic account with us with a limited documentation. But we are developing an identity system that's going to be even more robust that helps a refugee who's in transit to be able to access their account and verify their account if they lose all of their documentation. And I hope that's the future that the rest of financial institutions will go, is be less dependent on those paper documentation and IDs and more on the digital identities. But we're not quite there yet as a society, but moving that way.
Yeah. So was there any support provided by the government over there or by non-profit agencies? Who were your people? Who were your support and network over there professionally?
Yeah, and we were surprised. We initially thought that working with UNHCR and some of the big NGOs and governments would be the best place to start. But we were surprised that many of them have not or had any experience or were not comfortable with working with startups, for-profit companies and tech companies. They just weren't structured to partner with these small organizations. And so we had a hard time getting much support from some of those larger organizations. And we set up Leaf as a for-profit business versus a nonprofit business because we thought we could access more capital and invest that in technology and staff, and then ultimately provide a better service than if we were to go the nonprofit route. I think both are viable, but that was our decision to go that direction. And so we've actually been supported from a number of very different and unique organizations, everything from the Vatican. We won a pitch competition with the Vatican Church. Yep. To
congratulations.
Thanks. So really helpful. But yeah, the National Science Foundation with the U.S. government has supported us. And then we've won a number of other pitch competitions and accelerators that we've been part of that has raised our initial capital, but also given us access to networks and to partners and to mentors. And so I think that's been really helpful in these early days as we've gotten started and are now just about to do our seed round, hopefully in the beginning of next year, if the economy starts to get better next year. But yeah, it's been a tough year to start a startup.
No doubt about that, Nat. No doubt. But with this, I want to also ask, you are going to be going for your seed round it like the upcoming months. What is the one main challenge that you're facing right now?
In terms of the business, or
raising capital. Yeah.
Yeah. We've faced a lot of them. I think.
Yeah, clearly.
It's not an easy business model, right? We've got a less documented population. We're moving capital and money across borders. So there's a lot of regulation. There's anti-money laundering requirements in there. So, it's a tough one. And I think we finally now are in a good position with some of the partnerships we have on a regulation and licensing point of view. And so now our next big challenge has been customer acquisition and getting customers in a tide of COVID. And so I think our traditional strategy has been more of the in-person word of mouth, kind of traditional ways of getting and earning trust in our markets with that physical presence. And that's become a lot harder to do in most of our markets. But in East Africa, it's still, the markets that we're working with are not as, digitally native and not on, don't access internet and email quite as much as some of the other markets around the world. And so having to try to find this combination of both digital and in touch to, gather trust and to build trust with our platform. I think that's one of the challenges that we've been running into, but we're making progress. I think we've got about 1,300 customers right now. Have been only
that's
live
great.
For a few months. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're growing each week and doing more and more transactions. So we're getting there.
That is absolutely phenomenal. 1,300 customers right now, and it's only been a few months.
Yeah. So
great.
So early days.
Yeah, early days. Yeah. Working out pretty well. So like another question I have is about remote work. So with COVID-19 happening and a lot of companies going remote, how did your company, or specifically you, take care of this remote work environment? How did you navigate it? Like as an employer, plus along with employees, how did they navigate it as well?
Yeah, and it's a big one facing a lot of companies all over the world making
absolutely.
This transition to working from home, to working remotely. And we were very lucky and fortunate that we were nearly 100% remote and virtual before COVID hit. So we had team members in Rwanda, in Kenya, in the US, and were, I think at least I had been very remote since I think 2017, setting up Leaf as we were doing our first, exploring our first markets. It was a lot of Zoom calls and working with the team remotely. And so that transition hasn't been too difficult for us as a team. I think, we didn't have any baseline before that. So that's been helpful. And then also just thinking about our customer base that are on the move and remote and don't also have a home base to be in. I think trying to be as responsive to that market and that population is helpful. And we weren't exactly sure where we should have a headquarters or head office when we're serving a broader region across Africa. And especially again, a customer base that isn't always trusting of larger institutions and going into a bank branch. So trying to navigate those. But it's still hard. It's still tough to manage across cultures, across time zones, ensure accountability in delivering work and supporting our staff. And also at the same time, building a culture as a startup when you're not there to do that. And then certainly as a startup founder and fundraising, we're pulled in a lot of different directions. And I think it's been helpful being remote. You're not having to be in person with a lot of the investor calls. So for example, most companies that are in Silicon Valley or in the East Coast that are physically located there have a better time raising capital because they have access to all those funds. Whereas now, we just get a warm introduction to an investor and then setting up a Zoom call is much more acceptable than it was a year ago when you had to meet in person. And same thing with due diligence from the funds that are used to going in person and meeting with the staff and seeing the operations. That's not quite as feasible anymore. So a lot of those have made it more accessible to these funds and easier, in theory, I think easier to raise capital remotely, but we'll see.
Yeah, I get it. So basically what I heard was that you had a head start and you still didn't tell us about COVID-19. Nat, how sad of you, how selfish of you. Just kidding.
COVID? Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry about it. Mm-hmm.
Well, that was perfect. It's a great introduction into what Leap Global is and what you guys are trying to do. Is there any specific message you want to give to our followers? Anything you want them to know about the company or you?
Yeah, and I think what we're excited when you reach out to us is still, we're really trying to build especially our technical team, our remote technical team. And we've struggled with that. I think it's been hard to, source good engineering talent. We've worked with Upwork, with Indeed, and have had pretty mediocre, if not terrible, results through that. And so are always open to trying to find other communities and networks to find both part-time and full-time technical staff. So we really love to do that. And if there's anyone within your community or your network that are have some time and are eager to get involved in a really tough global problem that's affecting, nearly 70 million people around the world who've been displaced. I think this is a great opportunity to get involved and work from anywhere. I think that's still our structure and our motto going forward.
That is the biggest call to action I've ever heard, Nat. So great one on that. Thank you for coming. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. This was Gaper. Welcoming Nat from Leap Global.
Thank you. Thanks so much. I mean, my pleasure to be part of it. And please reach out to me if anyone's interested. Thanks for including me.
Please, absolutely. It was a pleasure.